Blog Talk Radio.
We had a heck of a run, this young. Yeah.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Good evening and welcome to Peach State Pandemonium for Thursday, September 4th, 2014. Well, we guys, I don't know the exact date, but it was in September 4 years ago that we started this thing together, and it's been a fun run so far. Hopefully we'll do 4 more years of it.
Well, I haven't been around that long with it, but I've enjoyed it.
We've enjoyed having you on here. The problem is like the, what we're doing tonight, I run out of things to say, and I do my best to keep from, you know, going back and discussing things we've talked about in the past, but sometimes we can't help it, so a lot of times we just have these free-for-alls and just talk about whatever comes up, whatever anybody's interested in talking about, so... That's what we're going to do tonight, but first we're going to let Jay give us a word from our sponsor.
Okay. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/GWHradio. A little static in my voice there, but we've had a wet day, folks.
That's right. Blends right in mind. You guys getting all this this rain down there, Jerry?
No, we need some.
Well, we've got plenty up here. We'll try and push it your way.
I heard that. Mike ran some topics by me for tonight. I kind of vetoed the famous partners of the McGuire twins. I figured we'd kind of run that one in the ground.
How many of those topics had Charlie Smith's name in them?
None.
If we were up to Charlie, we'd have a whole show talking, doing nothing but talking about him.
I told him last week, I said, if we don't get a check this week, you are officially cut off from being mentioned.
Well, he'll be cut off then.
You know, you talk.
What he's doing is he's saving up pennies. He's going to pay us in pennies.
Uh-oh. Well, you make the personal appearance with him Saturday night, Bobby?
No, I did not go to Monroe this week. I actually went to the Georgia Tech football game Saturday, and as hard as it is for me to admit, I guess I'm getting old because I like to dine.
Really?
It was 94 degrees, and that sun cooked me. And when I come out of there, it was all I could do to walk up that hill to my car. I mean, it just absolutely fried me. So... It was, but I heard they had a good crowd.
Good. Yeah, we went to the grocery store yesterday, and it was quite warm in the afternoon, and I told my wife a couple of months here we'll be wishing we had a little bit of that weather probably.
Oh, yeah.
It starts cooling off.
Yeah, well, I just hope it's I'd love to have a great fall. I mean, we haven't had a good fall here where it just got a little brisk, not cold, but just brisk, and, you know, I would love to have one.
Right.
Yeah, that'd be good. I'm usually in South Florida in the fall, so I don't get a break.
I'm glad for this break tonight. I mentioned last week we had our guys scheduled to come out and do the linoleum in our kitchen and dining room today, and it was supposed to be an eight-hour job. Well, after 8 hours, they were about half done, and I told them it was time to call it a day. I was then branded as inflexible by Mrs. West, but we'd still be hearing hammering downstairs if it wasn't for that. I will say for the guys, they did a good job, but they ran into the weather and a few boards they had to change, so I decided it was time to, you know, have the final bell for the evening on that.
Well, see, you can do that stuff when you're retired. They can just come out every day knowing you're going to be there.
They'll be back tomorrow for a return.
I was just telling Bobby, it's not on now, but I prior to getting on the radio, I was watching this show. I don't know if you guys watch it. It's called Man vs. Food on the Travel Network. Well, don't we wish Johnny Heidemann was around? We'd make a fortune off him.
Speaking
this guy ate a 72-ounce steak plus all the trimmings in some place called Big Texan in Amarillo, Texas.
Well, speaking of that, I saw the Facebook picture that you put out of you right before you had your problems last year, and then the latest picture of you, and it's almost like it's two different people, Mike.
Well, it was two different people in the first picture. They were just combined.
You're mentioning the Food Network. How is your appetite these days? It's fine.
I just have to be careful because different things affect me different ways as far as, you know, how long it stays with me. But for the most part, my appetite's fine. I just have to be careful once I'm back to normal that I don't overdo it.
Right.
Because I am not going to put that weight back on. I don't care what it takes. You know, I'll splurge every once in a while and, you know, eat a hamburger or, you know, get something from Sonic or something like that. That's the hard thing about watching this food channel. Like some of the stuff that they put on there or the travel channel, except the one with Andrew Zimmern, because he eats pig guts and worms and all that other stuff. I've yet to see him have anything on put in his mouth that I would eat. That's what he gets paid for. But some of that stuff, there's a show on there called King of Burgers or something like that, where they go all over the country and visit these hamburger places. And I love hamburgers anyway, but if they're done right. And some of these, you know, they're homemade burgers and everything, and they really look good. But
well, I don't think there's any of us that are on this show tonight that are adverse to good food.
It's just a matter of not eating too much of it.
That's correct. But, you know, I'm pretty white bread as far as my burgers are concerned. I like a good burger about medium and, you know, put a little bit of stuff on it. But I saw some pictures in the Journal over the weekend in their food section, and they had so much stuff piled on the burger, I couldn't tell whether there was a burger in there or not. You know, that's a little too much for me. A little too.
Well, see, I tend to eat, and it's really been good with me traveling. Of course, again, that's something I'll have to be careful of once I go back on the road. But I'm pretty daring in what I'll try. I love Creole food, Cajun food. I love, Bobby teases me because we went to IHOP one night and I had a hamburger with a fried egg on it. See, that was good to me.
Sure.
I like odd things. So, you know, I'm willing to try anything once. And if I like it, I'll eat it again. What I discovered last year when I was in Fort Walton is there's a restaurant down there. If you're ever in Destin, I highly recommend this place. It's called Lanyap. And they serve, it's a Creole restaurant in Fort Walton or Destin, Florida. And I had shrimp and grits there. And there's also a place, and Bobby's been there with me, because when we went to Chris Kelly's funeral, we all went the night before, and I can't remember the name of this place, but they had fish and grits there too, and it was fantastic.
It had frogs all over the place, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, owls. It was owls.
Owls, that's the name of it, yeah. Or owl. Was that the name of the place?
I don't think that's what their motif was. I don't know if that was the name of it or not. I don't know if it was something like that.
I can't remember. Food was good.
Food was very good. I had discovered that when, actually the same time I was in Fort Walton. I had driven over to Mobile and met Juanita and Brian, and we went to... Brian found this place. He looked it up and found it on the internet. So we went over there and tried it, and I loved it. I don't remember what I had that first time, but it was such a nice place that we all went that night. It was Bobby and myself, Scrappy with us. No, Randy and Charlie. Joe Turner met us there, and Bob Kelly met us there. So it was.
I guess as a Gulf Coast guy, you've always been
big on
seafood, right?
Too, I think.
Okay, it seemed like he rode
yeah,
down.
He was with us.
That's right, because
yeah.
we all
yeah.
went down.
Yeah, Scrappy and Charlie stayed in a room together, and me and Randy did, and then you had a room.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
it.
Right. I got us all free rooms. That's right. So what were you saying, Jay, about Gulf Coast?
I was just saying, as a Gulf Coast guy, you were probably always prone to seafood, right?
Actually, not really, because I until I moved here, I didn't really eat seafood, and I'm still not crazy about fish. There's certain fishes I'll eat, but I wasn't real wild about seafood until I got married. I was up here and got married, and then when my then wife and I used to go down and either visit her parents and my parents in Mobile, or we'd go down and stay at Pensacola Beach. There's a place out on Dog River called the Wharf or the Pier or something like that, but we used to go there every time we went because the seafood was so good, and that's really when I got into it. And there's a lot of things I eat now that I wouldn't, when I was growing up, I wouldn't touch, like fried okra and stuff like that. I wouldn't even think about it.
Yeah, but, I've opened up a little bit, but not a whole lot. I never had seafood as a kid. My father, you know, would fish, but it was always freshwater fish, and I
right.
had some of that. But never was raised with seafood, and there's a comic called Jim Gaffigan. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him or not, but he doesn't like seafood, and in his act he calls anything seafood is sea bugs. But it's pretty funny, but you can, you know, if you can relate to it if you have an appetite similar to that.
Oh, yeah. But see, I love crawfish. I love alligator. I love all that. So, well, I guess we better talk about wrestling. Otherwise, people think they've turned into the cooking show here.
Well, let me ask a question here. I know you guys rib a lot with Jerry about the McGuire twins, and I'm certainly familiar with them, but I'm not familiar with the story. So somebody tell me about Jerry and the McGuire twins without just kind of sticking it to his rib there.
Well, Jerry can tell it very well.
I was going to say, we got the horse's
mouth.
Right,
he's right there. We'll tell it.
Is this necessary?
I want to hear it. I feel left out because I really don't know the story.
Well, the story is I had been in Dallas, and so I'm coming back to Georgia, right? So my first night back, I started in Columbus. Well, I got the paper that morning and looked to see what the matches were because they always said the whole card in the paper. It was the McGuire twins and myself against the Garvins. And I said, "Hey, no way." Well, we get down there, and it's a six-man tag match, right? So
right.
if I'm in the ring, both of them are in the ring, but they're in the corner.
Right.
They can't get in and out.
Right.
They have to stay in the ring. And it was just awful. It was awful. It was awful. I thought I was going to die.
Well, how much did they work out with you of the match before time here?
Yeah, right. I don't even remember how they got up on the apron to get in the ring.
They
don't.
They used to.
That.
Somebody used to stand in the ring and hold the bottom rope up, and they'd roll in.
Yeah.
That
times
been,
I saw.
Let me give you,
as Paul Harvey would say, let me give you the rest of the story. When he told this story one night, and he told how embarrassing it was, Michael had, you know, Michael has got, he, you know, his computer, you wouldn't believe. He comes up with some color pictures of Jerry, and we send them to Bo James in Tennessee. So Bo works on these pictures for probably 2 weeks, and he finally sends them back to me. And Jay, he put a picture together with the McGuire twins, and Jerry standing between them, and
really?
It looks like Jerry's got his arms around them. It couldn't have been no better. So I took the
picture,
and he even put Oak's Gym on the shirts the McGuire's
yeah.
were wearing. So I took them and sent them out to the place where Charlie gets his T-shirts done.
Yeah.
And I had 5 or 6 T-shirts made. Took one to work. I mean, they're good. We had World Six-Man Tag Team Champions put on it. And I took the shirt to work, folded it up, put it in a FedEx box with a letter from Renegade T-Shirt Company thinking we had a money-making project. We just needed his authority to release it. And I shipped it to Jerry. And he had no clue about none of this. He gets home, Kathy called, "What'd you order?" "Nothing." Then he looked, he seen it, he opened it up, he pulled the shirt out. He was so overwhelmed with the shirt, he didn't even notice it said Oak's Gym on it. Kathy goes, "My God, it says Oak's Gym on them shirts." So that was good. I knew I was either going to ruin a long friendship or he was going to think it was funny, and thank God he thought it was funny. And then what we did last year when we went to Scott's, we went up there, and there was about seven of us, Scott Teal, myself, Charlie, Scrappy, Gene Bennett. There was a couple of more there we gave shirts to. We all had our picture made with these Oates Brothers shirts on in front of the ring, and I sent him that one frames, and it was the first meeting of the Oates Brothers fan club, or the Oates McGuire fan club, I think is what I called it.
Well, I'll tell you how sick I am. I got an office here at my house. I got, you know, Japanese posters and frames. I had this person that knew how to decorate. They decorated my room with certain pictures and all. You know, I actually have that picture out.
I love it. I love it.
Well,
ask you this, Jerry. Who took most of the bumps and did the work in that match on your team?
I'm still tired from that match.
You talk about false tags. It was a shoot on the garbage part to keep him from getting to that corner.
No tag.
There was probably only three corners of the ring that night, wasn't there? I mean, seriously.
Oh,
did they ride their little motorcycles to the ring?
No, they did not.
I saw them.
Lord, if you guys went on second or third, they had to start it before the match started. Matches started just to walk out there.
They did.
They didn't have
their
bikes.
Did they dress in the regular dressing room, Jerry, or did they have their own?
No, they dressed in there with us.
Oh, did they? Okay.
Oh, man.
What was that place you were talking about? Had a small dressing room, Bobby. I bet they never booked them there.
Okay, they wouldn't. They couldn't have gotten that babyface dressing room in Carrollton. It's that original building over there.
Oh no, God! No,
That room, when you sat down, you had to put your legs between the guy's legs sitting across from you so you could tie your boots up.
They'd
have died. If it had been in the summer, you remember how hot it was in there.
Oh yeah, jeez.
Well, I'm not about to ask you how they bathed.
Sir, I don't know anything about that.
I never worked with them. I was never around them until I met. Which one was the one that I know one died? Which was the one that lived? Benny?
I think Benny's the one that lived.
I met Benny in Mobile. He came to the reunion one year, and I sat down back there and was talking to him. What a super nice guy.
Oh, they were nice guys.
They just got sucked into some promoter's saw money signs with these big guys. And
I tell you, that promoter was. His name was Gory Guerrero.
Well,
he's responsible for him.
Well, they were just trying to make a dollar, trying to make a living.
Part of their gimmick, they were both married to two Japanese girls at one time, and there were pictures of them made, and then. Once the one died, then of course the other one, the one that was still alive, he was divorced. But I'm not sure that the other one's still alive now.
No, he died.
No, they're both gone.
So. But I saw him one night at the auditorium, and did they work for Gacko Bobby?
No.
Okay, then they must have been working.
No, we did not have the McGuire's. We had the pleasure of working with Happy Humphrey.
Oh, I saw him several times. But the McGuire's did work one night at the Atlanta City Auditorium. And they came down in their motorcycles. And it was pretty much like Jerry said, once they got wherever they were going to be, that's pretty much where they were, you know. And the fans seemed to like them. But it was, once again, it was one of those deals you see them one time and you've seen all you want of them. But I couldn't imagine.
They came through Mobile probably three or four different times. And, of course, they always booked them to work against the two of them against three or four guys.
Right.
And
the Happy Humphrey thing, that only lasted a couple of weeks, but because he had a little age on him at the time. But I can remember going to buildings with him where he wouldn't fit in the dressing room. And one place in particular, they let him dress at a picnic table in the corner of the building. And they hung a big quilt up where he could get behind the quilt and change clothes.
He was before he started back working and worked for All South. He was working at a little shoe shop in Forest Park. I saw him in there several times, and, but I didn't know his history that he had worked. And then all of a sudden there he was. But he wasn't in for just one night. He worked for a while, right?
He was there a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
He kind of made the loop on the spot shows. I don't even remember if he ever worked auditorium in Atlanta or not.
He was from Macon, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's from Macon.
Yes.
William Cobb was his name. His heyday was the late 50s up through probably the middle 60s. And then he lost all that weight and got down to about 230 pounds. And then he put it all back on and worked. If he probably worked less than a year when he made his comeback.
Harley Race's first job in the wrestling business was hauling him around. He was his driver.
Well, there was another one that we all know and that did the same thing, and that was Billy Boy Hines. He was his driver there for a while.
I'll tell you another. Well, I mean, he wasn't as big as that, but another. I mean, yeah, those the big guys. You know, I mean, they were. I don't know them. Like I said, I was never around the McGuire's, but I can imagine. I was around Happy Humphrey a little. Gorilla Watts, who was never not that big. He probably weighed 400 pounds, but he was only 4.5 feet, 5 feet tall. But you know, and we've talked about this, you know, Jerry talked about being around these guys. That's like Haystacks. Haystacks was a big fella, but I just never, it was just, there was something different about him. I thoroughly enjoyed being around Haystacks.
Did Tom Resto get Jerry Blackwell in the business?
Jerry was working. He was working for opposition, some little opposition groups up around Gainesville, up there where he was from. But Tom first started using him when we were working for Gunkel. He used him. He used him under a hood some as the Crusader, and he also used him without the hood from time to time.
I saw him with bleach blonde hair, and he was using the name Man Mountain Blackwell.
Yeah, he did that for a while. Yeah, and then, of course, he went to AWA, and he got his break up there with Vince. Blackwell was a big guy, but Blackwell could do anything.
Oh, yeah.
He sure could. I mean, he sure could.
He could throw drop kicks. I've seen him take backdrops over the top rope. I mean, just anything he wanted to do.
Well, that's because he was stout about the head and shoulders.
Oh, God, that he sat down on the bottom rope at Atlanta TV, and the top rope, his head hit the middle rope, and it slid up, went over his head, and it slingshotted him. He went head first backwards. And I don't even remember who he was wrestling. I turned around, pushed him back away from the ropes, and I said, "He's dead. I'm afraid to go look." And I turned around and went back over, and I looked, and here he was climbing back in the ring. And we got through with the match. As soon as we went through the door, remember Atlanta TV, Jerry, that old building there, when you went through the door, you were right there. I mean, if you went straight across, you'd be in the bathroom.
Exactly.
Ernesto was standing in the door of the bathroom when we opened the door. He said, "Boy," he said, "I thought you was dead." And that Blackwell said, "Well, I've always been stout about my neck and shoulders." I thought, God. But I met his son at the Wrestling 2 show they did up in Kennesaw.
Yeah.
You know the guy refereed that night, Mike, that guy with the big beard, they called him Wolfman?
Yeah, yeah.
That's Jerry's son.
Hmm.
Yeah, and
well, that was the same guy. Yeah, he refereed for Jerry when he was running his own promotion.
There you go. Yeah.
Because he was called the Wolfman there, too. Yeah.
Well, that's his son.
Hmm. Yeah, I never was around Jerry. Never got the opportunity to meet him, but I saw him work a lot. In fact, he came to work for Fuller in 78, 79, somewhere around in there, probably 79, same time Hogan and, at that time he was called Terry Boulder, and Austin Idol, and I think Louis Tillette was booking. But they brought him in under a hood, and they called him the Canadian Bumblebee. And again, he was throwing drop kicks and all that stuff. And then he unmasked after about a week or two, and then worked a couple more weeks as just a Crusher Blackwell, and that was it.
Well, he used to ride with me. We used to make trips together. And he was as country as anything you've ever met. And what you see is what you got. There was no pretense about him at all. He was a funny guy.
Well, it surprised me because I had seen him in the magazines from being up there working in New York. But it surprised me when I saw him live is how short he was. He couldn't have been more than 5'5", 5'6".
Yeah, he wasn't tall at all.
But he could work.
They put him with it. When we were working for Gunkel, after Ox kicked that bear in Atlanta, and the bear, every time the bear saw Ox, he'd just sit down after that. They put Blackwell with the bear, and we made the loop during the spot shows and stuff. And Dickie ran Buena Vista, Georgia, at the high school there. And we went down there, and Blackwell pinned that stupid bear. I mean, he pinned the bear. He told me, he said, count him out. I said, Jerry, where's his shoulders at? He said, I don't know, but he's down. I said, well, yeah, but I don't think we need to beat the bear.
Oh. Which bear was that? Who had it?
Oh, that was that guy that Gene Bennett knew him. He was up from up around Calhoun.
He used the name Reptile. His name was Bill
him.
Something. Or
that's him. Yeah, he was originally from Ohio, but it was his bear.
Yeah.
But the bear was, I mean, that was the tamest, gentlest bear I was ever around. I used to get to the towns early where I could play with it. Man, it was like a big dog. But buddy, if he ever, I know I've told this, he'd get to the towns and he would stake that bear off out in front of the building. You know, people would see it and have to sign up our wrestling bear here tonight or something. We was in Athens out in front of the J&J Center, and I'd got there and if you ever worked J&J in the summer, you know what hot is. And I went outside and he had that thing staked out, and there was a little old girl there. She's probably 14, 15 years old, and she said, can I pet it? And the guy said, sure. And she was over petting the bear, and she was scratching the bear's ears. And I said, well, the bear kind of laid back on its back while she was scratching. Well, she just kind of squatted down and kept scratching the bear's ears. Well, the bear took his two front paws and put them back up over his head. Well, she thought he wanted to play or something, so she reached down and grabbed his paws. And when she did, that bear pulled him bottom legs up and got her in the stomach. And when he turned her loose, she did about three flips and landed about 10 feet on the other side of that bear. And I turned around and walked off because I figured somebody was either dead or they was going to have a lawsuit. But she got up and laughed about it.
Well, that was very fortunate.
Yes, but this bear was, it would actually wrestle with you as long as you didn't kick it in the nose, because when it's the ox, it'd just sit down.
Billy Walker, that was his name.
Billy Walker, yep.
Got your gray cells working there, huh, Mike?
No, I just looked up a picture I had of him.
Oh, you did? Oh, that's not fair.
Hey, use what you can when you get to my age.
Jerry,
old age and treachery will beat youth and stamina any day.
Jerry, how was your weekend working down there on the beach?
Sunday it was slammed. So I had fireworks Sunday night. It was slammed. Hot. It was so hot. And then Monday, which was Labor Day, wasn't too bad. But Sunday, it was just slammed. I don't know how many people were down there.
So is your busy season over now, or will it keep on till it cools down?
Yeah, the busy season's over. Okay. It's done.
Well, I can remember being in Charleston last year in November, and it was like 85 degrees in Charleston at that time, and about the second week in November. So I imagine where you are there, it stays, as long as there's no odd weather come in, it stays pretty warm for quite some time, doesn't it?
Yeah. The weekend, it'll still be some, but nothing like the summer. But, it can go into the first of late October, first of November, then that's it. I mean, but when it gets cold down there, I mean, my gosh, that wind, good gosh. I mean, you get in the 30s down there, and that wind blowing, I mean, that wind chill is just, I mean, it's unbearable. And that wind blows all
the time. Do you have to ride the golf cart in the wintertime?
We'll go out there if it's not, well, if it's real windy, you can't go on the beach because it's like a sandblaster. And this winter, they're going to refurbish the beach. They do it about every 7 or 8 years. So that's going to be going on all winter.
Okay.
Do they talk to the public when they do that?
Certain sections will be. They have to close certain sections.
Oh, they do it in sections at times.
It takes a while to do it.
Holiday functions like around Thanksgiving and Christmas there, like Callaway Gardens does?
No, we got one more big event. It's called Pirate Fest, and that's like the 10th, 11th, and 12th of October, and it's slammed for that. They have bands like three nights, and it's just jam-packed. And that's the last event of the season. But, thousands of people come down there, just thousands. It's a big deal.
Too bad Tiny Frazier's not still alive. He could come down there and sing for you and sell watches to everybody.
He could sell watches. Talking about haystacks, I know like Bobby said, he's different than all the rest of the guys. He was. I don't know if everybody on tonight knew him, but he was a good guy. I really liked him. Traveled with him many, many places, many, many times. So this is like 1972 with Atlanta TV, and for some reason he needed a ride to Columbus TV. So Ernesto running around, he asked Soto. Soto had a new car, and I had a new car. He asked Soto, would he take Sax to Columbus? He said, I'm not riding him in my car.
I can hear him now.
No, really, he was serious.
I know he was. That's what I'm saying. I can hear him now.
You should have heard
him. I have no doubt he was serious.
I took him. But Soto, he said, I'm not putting that big man in my car. And he didn't take him, but I took him. But he was a pleasure to travel with.
Didn't he always travel with a dog or something?
Jewel.
Most of the time?
Dog. Yeah.
He had a station wagon with the front seat removed, right?
He didn't have his seat removed. He drove an International.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
It was called the International Travel Hall.
Yeah.
And that's what I always knew in the drive.
Yeah.
But I was in different places with him, and he'd always want me to ride. He didn't like riding with anybody, you know. I mean, he felt more comfortable in his own things. Maybe you want to ride with me? I said, sure, I'll ride with you. So I'd ride with him a lot. But I'll never forget that day at TV. So I said, no, I'm not going to haul him. I don't know what he'd done if he'd asked him to haul the giant. I hauled him I don't know how many times out in Louisiana.
Oh. I took him to Macon one time. So that poor giant folded up like an accordion to get in my car.
I was going to Griffin one night from Columbus TV, and big man asked me, he said, where are you tonight? Carrollton or Griffin? I said, I'm in Griffin. He said, I need a ride. Andre, I got a Toyota. Ted and I had two Toyotas just alike. They were SR5s. They were something. I said, big man, I said, I don't know if you can get in that car. He said, I'll get in it. Well, I knew he was in there, believe me.
did it kind of go to one side, Jerry?
Listen, you thought I was pulling a 48-foot boat. That would have been a great commercial for Toyota.
Bobby, those special attraction guys like that weren't working regularly for the office, when they'd come to town, did the office take care of their accommodations or did they have to do it themselves?
Nope, they on their own. Now, a guy like Andre, he made a lot of money. But he took care of his own accommodations. I mean, Andre was very little trouble. He never complained about nothing. He was as easygoing as anybody I ever come across. However, he would, if a girl, kind of nuzzled up to him or showed him some affection or promised him some affection, he'd get a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be a place over on Cleveland Avenue in Atlanta called the West Texas Music Club.
Yep.
And they had a horse on top of it, sort of like the Denver Bronco mascot, that kind of a rared up horse.
Oh yeah.
They called me one night and said, you need to get over to Hateville to the West Texas over there and see if you can get Andre down. I said, what do you mean get him down? She said, just go over there. When I got over there, it looked like a scene out of a King Kong movie. They had spotlights on him and all kind of stuff. He was up there riding that horse on top of the building. And I got out there, and the police chief was there, and he walked over to me, and he said, you Bobby? I said, yeah. He said, well, we asked him to call you. He said, we don't want to take him to jail or nothing. He said, well, we got to get him down. He said, he's causing a scene here. And I climbed the ladder and got up on top of the building and walked over there, and I said, what's going on? And some young lady in that bar told him if he'd ride that horse, she'd take him home and just ride him. So he was up there riding the horse. So I got him down. How that did not make the newspaper, I will never know.
Well, you know, it's very fortunate that you didn't have the internet and the YouTube and everything that you've got now.
And didn't have all the phones with the cameras.
Yeah.
And because as far as I know, it just got squashed, and we never heard anything about it.
It would have been nationwide within a couple of hours.
And when he got down, she was gone, right?
No, she's waiting on him. She's waiting on him. There was I got called. You remember? I know you never went to Tim Wood's place, did you, Jerry? When he opened that LP Pips. See, I was not a bar person. I never went to him either. But he opened that bar up over there. Well, you know, it was a good thing and a bad thing. He was probably, prior to two, Tim Woods was probably the biggest baby face that this territory had ever known. I mean, he was just unreal over, especially when he first came. But they called me to go over there one night, said they was having a problem, and I went over there. And when I got over there to see what was going on over there, Wahoo was chasing Norvell Austin around the building with a shotgun. Just playing, just having fun. just crazy stuff. Got called one night to bail. Barnett called me. He goes, Mr. Bobby, you got any money? And I said, yeah, I got a little bit. He said, you got $200? I said, yeah. He said, would you please go to Hateville and bail Wahoo out of jail? And I said, I'm going to call Randy. I said, because Randy lives closer, to see if he's got it. I said, but one of us will get him out. So I called Randy, and Randy had the money, and Randy went to get him. So they bailed him out, took him back down to Pips to get his car down there. And Randy told him, he said, follow me. He said, I'm going to show you how to get back to your apartment over there without having to go through Hateville. And so Randy turned, and instead of Wahoo following him, Wahoo went right back through the middle of Hateville again, drunk as Cooter Brown, driving that Cadillac and blowing the horn and just.
Oh, wow.
I mean, people wonder why I quit the wrestling business. I quit the wrestling business because I'm being perfectly honest with you. If I had been refereeing every night, I would probably have worked until I fell over and they toted me out. But working in that office, and Barnett was good to me. He treated me very well. I made good money. But it finally got to the point where it was like running a daycare center for adults, and I could not stand it no more. That's the reason I quit. It was it was awful. The straw that broke the camel's back for me was getting a phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning because two guys drove a Lincoln Continental up in Ohio down a railroad track and just absolutely tore the front end out from under it. Now, why they're trying to drive down a railroad track, I don't know. But
you know why.
Oh, I know why. I know how come it happened. I'm saying, but what they were thinking, I have no clue. But they said the guy with the rental car place said the car was tore up so bad they had to kick the tires back straight just to get it to roll.
That's sad.
Yeah, it will.
When
we started running those tours, now, I mean, at the time we were doing this, I mean, a guy's week consisted of Columbus, Ohio on Sunday night. Tuesday night could have been Cleveland. Wednesday could have been Grand Rapids, Michigan, Kellogg's or Battle Creek, Michigan, winding up somewhere back down in Ohio on Friday night. The guys, we paid for their airplane tickets, we paid for the rental cars, and we gave them $25 a piece per diem to eat on. And all they had to do was show up and work and get paid. I mean, they were making good money.
Yep.
Real good money. And they couldn't stand prosperity. Could not stand it. It got so bad, they tore those cars up so bad that the rental car company, and I can't even remember which one it was, the guy called me, and he told me, he said, we're not going to be able to rent you cars anymore. He said, you guys have tore up our cars too bad. Because all we rented was Lincoln Continentals because we put four guys in a car.
That's pretty sad, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Think of all the money they went through, you know, and didn't bank it.
Nope.
And that's why they're either still working today when they can't walk or they're dead.
Or signing autographs for whatever they can get for them, you know.
And did they get fired by them?
No.
See there?
No. No, they did not. And, you know, I don't know. That's kind of the stuff that, you know, I mean, that's where it had gotten to. And Jim, as good as he was to me, when somebody screwed up, he wanted to scream at somebody. Familiarity breeds contempt. I was the closest guy. So there was a lot of days I took the brunt of his screaming and yelling and other people screaming and yelling when I really didn't have anything to do with it. You know, guy missed an airplane, it's my fault. You know, I mean, I don't know what else you can do other than hold their hand, and that wouldn't work.
So, you know, and the thing is, if you'd only had one guy to watch, it would have been a different story. But
I'm just saying,
if I got to watch you, I don't need you.
That's it.
Nobody's that important. That's just my thinking.
Well, that was always my philosophy too, you know. And you know, you could, you know, in the time frame we're talking about, there was a lot of talent roaming around the country, and people were begging to come here.
Yep.
And you know, yeah, you're gonna have a little bit of a setback if you have to let a guy go, and he's one of your stars, but. How many times has that happened where that star got too big for his britches and said, I want more money, and they said, we don't need you, goodbye. You know, you just shove somebody else in his spot, and then you do it over a period of 3 weeks, and they're right back up there on top again. And then I never quite got it.
I never did get it.
Well, I mean, I just...
Gary, did you find yourself held to different standards because you were a guy that didn't do that kind of stuff and showed up, and as you've talked about, and were on time and this sort of thing, than some of these crazy guys that, you know, did everything they could to except get fired?
To be honest with you, Jay, it actually used to make me sick. You know, and some of these guys that you saw in positions that, in my opinion, and probably a lot of other people's opinion, shouldn't have been there. You know, I've seen guys come in drunk, go out there, work, have to crawl under the ring and throw up because they're drunk and get back in the ring. Bobby's seen it. And I just had more pride in myself and what I did than to do that. I mean, I just did. That was just me, you know. I tried to carry myself as for what I did and who I was, and I was glad I could do what I did, you know, and proud that I could do it. And
right.
to just see some guys that, you know, there was no shame in nothing they did, or, you know, trash rooms, and that just wasn't me. That you know, I guess I had better upbringing than that, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I agree with you. I had the same philosophy in the broadcasting business and in the music business. And, you know, there was just some clowns that, like Bobby was saying, that at a certain point you just got to say, I've had enough. You know, I can't take it anymore. And
You can't. And it's just like the NFL, you know. I wouldn't care what the rules were that the NFL put down. If I was an owner and was a fortunate enough person to be on this earth and be a billionaire, which you got to be a billionaire to own one of those teams, and I'm paying these guys, these talented guys, that kind of money, I'm paying them, not the NFL, I'm paying them. I would have my own rules that would be in their contract. And you'd be done. It's just
right.
like a season rocks along. I don't care who the quarterback is, whether it's Peyton Manning or Aaron Rodgers or who it is. The season, like Bobby was talking about, you know, oh, well, we can't get rid of him. He's on top no matter what he's done. Just like in a football season, if Peyton Manning goes down or Aaron Rodgers goes down, it goes on. It goes on.
Yep.
Yep.
With or without them. And why these people put up with that, I'll never, ever, never understand it. But if I owned a territory or a team, there would be rules and laws, my own rules and laws. And you'd have to follow them, you'd be gone. And like you said, there's talent out there.
Well, you know, it's – you and I know you run into this, Jerry. Some of these guys, they started believing their own crap.
Oh,
they
please.
Thought they were that good. They thought they were the end-all to, you know, what this business was about. Without them, it wouldn't survive. Without them, the territory would bankrupt. You know, and they started to believe this crap, and when they did, that's when they started. I mean, they would, you know, they treat other people differently, they talk to people differently, they just believe their own crap, and you know, there was never anybody I saw that I thought was so good that the business couldn't do without them. I mean, it was just.
You're right. There hasn't been one come down the pike yet. And,
no.
And what they forget, what they all forgot, Bobby and Jay, they all forgot that they was only in that position because they was put in that position.
Right.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
That's exactly right.
Somebody gave them a break, and they were fortunate.
That's it. Whether it was a long-time friend or you was, you know, we're going to do this for you, we're going to do that for you, there was... You were put in that position to get over. You push somebody long enough, and they'll get over. If he's got any kind of working ability at all,
sure.
But you know, and they, like Bobby said, they got the believing.
Yep.
How many guys did you run across, Jerry? And here again, you know, I'm not here to throw anybody under the bus or name names or anything, but. How many guys did you run across that had a heck of a lot more talent than the guy that was on top, but
oh, wow.
just never got the break?
Bobby.
I mean, there's...
the list is longer than the guys that were on top.
Yes, sir. It certainly is.
But what I never understood, you take a guy like two. Did he ever cause any trouble? Did he ever get arrested?
Nope.
He was dependability and credibility would have been my most important thing in running anything, you know, whether it's a baseball team, a football team, or what we did. But they let these guys get away with murder. They let them get away with murder. I just didn't see it. You look back at it and once you're away from, when you're in it, you know, that old saying, you can't see the forest for the trees. When you're in it, sometimes you can't see it and you step back and you look and say, why was that going on? Why did they allow that? Why did they put up with it? You know, like Bobby said, nobody was that important. Nobody.
And I'll tell you something else too. Working in the office as long as I did and being around business people, I started looking at it more as a business than I guess some of the guys ever did. They just, to them, you know, a lot of the guys, it was fun and games. That's all it was. But I looked at it from a business perspective. And here's an example I'll give and just that'll relate. You owned a gymnasium. Now, in that gymnasium, you had all sorts of equipment there, and in that gym, those heavy weights, the equipment you had, and even down to the blender where you mixed up your drinks up there, every piece of that equipment was capable of
chopping a guy's finger off, falling across his neck and choking him to death. I mean, there was all sorts of liability issues that you had running that gymnasium.
Absolutely.
Now, when Donut was working for you, and I'm just using Don as an example, but if Donut showed up drunk one day, would you let him go out there and work, train somebody on a bench press, knowing that if he's spotting them and he's too drunk to do anything about it, you wouldn't put him out there. You wouldn't put your business on the line. You'd have sent him home or fired him or whatever, or killed him.
He'd have been done. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, here again, I look at these promoters and these bookers that just turned a blind eye to these guys that were so messed up, they didn't even know where they were. You'd have to throw them in a shower to try to sober them up to get them to go to the ring. You're putting them out there. Not only is it, you may not look at it as a liability factor, but if Jerry Oates is my North American heavyweight champion and I'm sending Joe Bologna out there to work with him, and Joe Bologna's a drunk, he don't know what he does, he can't take care of himself, much less my champion.
Thank you. It's like when I had my gym. I was blessed. That place used to get so packed at night. I looked in there one night, and there were so many people in there. I mean, I don't know how many. You couldn't have got another. Hey, you got guys pressing all this weight. You got guys squatting all this weight. You got guys with dumbbells. You got guys doing this, doing that. But they all knew. When you get that many people in there, and they're working out, and it was a serious gym. It wasn't just where you go and sit around and talk. I mean, people were training.
Yeah.
They knew, don't start anything in that gym. First of all, it'd kill my business. Don't go up there, man. They fighting there and everything else.
Yep.
I had one incident in there one night. One guy borrowed a guy's car. He said he had his car for sale. He said, I think I might buy that car. He said, well, just take it overnight and drive it. Well, he brought it back to the guy, and the stereo system out of it was gone. But he left the keys at the guy's house and the car in his yard. So the guy that took the car and got the stereo stuff out of it, he was in there working out. He good body on the kid. He built and all. So the guy that let him use the car, he said, I'm going in there. And he said, I'm going to beat his brains out right in this gym's. And I was sitting in my office. He went on by and went in there. I went in and grabbed him by the back of his shirt in front of everybody, lifted him up off the ground, walked him out of the gym, took him to my office, and I went and got the other guy, did him the same. What are you doing? I said, you're going to find out when you get up here. I said, I got him in there. I said, I don't care what your problem is. I don't care what he stole or what he didn't steal. You're not going to settle it in this gym. And I never had any trouble after that. But I couldn't listen, like Bobby said, and the wrestling business, you get a guy all buzzed up, doped up, drunk, he could go out there and beat some woman to death at ringside or something, saying something.
Exactly.
You know?
I was about to say, because, you know, he could, you know, a lot of people want to fight when they drink anyway. You know, you get
exactly.
Somebody like that, and a fan says something to them, first thing they're going to do is smack one of them.
Yeah,
the problem we had in our business, though, most of the time it wasn't their drinking that was the problem.
Yeah.
You know, and you didn't, I mean, I'll be honest. I'm naive and I'm dumb. I don't know one thing from the other. I wouldn't know it if you laid it on this table here. And these guys, I didn't know how to deal with this stuff. And neither did anybody else. But I can tell when a guy's messed up.
You ain't got to be a rocket scientist.
No, sir. I mean, I just
you might not know what he's on, but you know he ain't right.
Jeez.
Well,
come on.
Another sad thing is today these sports stars that make the big paydays and don't care what they do to whoever and pull these theatrics, I mean, kids look up to them, and they think that's what they're supposed to do. And
That's why I'm telling you, you're right. I mean, and it's bad. It's, you know, where's all this going? I really don't know. I don't know.
I think I'm sounding like an old fogey, but I just think that the sports business today is just, I mean, you take a guy in the NFL from the 70s, I mean, they'd have some type of shock if they were to see how much a guy that was further down, you know, on the roster than they were at the kind of money that they're being paid today. It's
insanity.
Yes.
It's insanity. And instead of being
thankful and knowing how blessed they are, it's owed to them.
Yeah, they think it's that it's owed to them, and what the heck, you know, live.
Yeah, I'm sure Jay, you saw a lot of the same thing in the music business. I remember back in the 80s and early 90s, people like Axl Rose, who, you know, he got a break. He got a break that millions of people want to get. And what's he do? Oh, I don't feel like performing tonight. I'm going to show up 5 hours late, sing two songs, throw a tantrum, and walk off the stage. And, you know, Kurt Cobain, who was a genius as far as the music goes and what he wrote and everything. But
right.
This whole thing of, I don't want to be famous, and I, you know, my fame is trapping me. And well, then why did you get in the music business?
Well, you know, and it doesn't even have to be that. I mean, I worked the journeyman circuit in the music business, and it was almost a sliding scale. The more talented a guy was, the bigger screw up he was, and I just saw so many people that had so much talent in that business that just threw it all away because they were either drinking it up or shooting it up their nose or what, and they couldn't show up and they couldn't perform, and you know, it made it difficult on everybody else, because you tell somebody working that type circuit that you're a musician, and all of a sudden they put you in that same category.
Yep. Exactly.
And it was the same thing in the radio business, too, you know. But in most cases there, it was some guy threatened to shoot you because he said you were running around with his girlfriend or his wife, one or the other. But it all boils down to fame. And whether it's real fame or just in your brain that you're famous because somebody else tells you you are, and you just decide to live that image. But it's really sad when I look at the guys in the wrestling business that were on top because, as Jerry said, somebody put them there, and how much money they made. And if you look at them today, they are pathetic. And I really feel bad about some of those guys, even if they did, let's say, deserve it.
Some guys did deserve it, and that's why I'm not going to go to some of these matches and sit around and try to sell my picture. I'm not going to do it. I'm not. If I didn't get it when I was out there, I'm not going to get it trying to sell a picture for $2.
Right.
$2? I'm not going to lower myself to that. I mean,
no,
I would
get
feel
$5
like,
for them. Don't be lowering it up to $2. Nobody sells nothing for $2.
Or sell them to Smith's Comedy Company for $2 so he can sell them for $15.
That's right.
We can put these McGuire pictures on the Internet and make a fortune. I got news for you.
But I'm not going to go to some place and sit around and try to peddle pictures. I'm not going to do it. That's just me. Jay, have you ever seen, if you were a promoter and you was going to bring a piece of talent, I'm talking about a singer, to a town, what they send the promoter that they want?
Oh, my God.
There was a guy in my town, his name was Mike Blackwell.
Right.
I don't know if you ever heard of him. He promoted all kind of people, you know. He showed me a contract. He was going to bring Kenny Rogers to Dothan, Alabama.
Right, yeah.
He showed me this was the demand. This wasn't like maybe have this stuff there for him.
Right.
He wanted like a certain type bottled water.
Right.
So many bottles.
Yep.
He wanted M&Ms.
Yes.
And they all had to be red.
Yep. Yeah, just because they could.
But what I'm getting at is, how many years did they struggle and starve and had to beg and borrow to get to the next town?
Right.
To make a gig, and then you finally make it, and then you do that to some poor soul who was trying to promote you.
Right. But
I don't know if you've ever seen one of those sheets, but it went on. It was ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
I can't even remember everything.
Yeah, and once again, it made it harder on the guys that didn't require that kind of stuff. And, you know, and people would laugh at you and would say, well, you can get that. Why don't you do it? No, that's not the way I work. But, yeah, it's...
go ahead, Jay.
But it's, you know, the other part of that is, Jerry, when they get to that top, there's only one way to go, and that's to slide on down, like you were saying.
I promoted bodybuilding shows once a year, big shows. I mean, they were big, and I would always bring in a professional bodybuilder that was in the magazines, and everybody knew who they were, and as a guest poser. So, I mean, I would fly them round trip from Los Angeles at my expense, put them up at the Hilton.
Yep.
Food was on me, paid everything for them, because I'm going to make money off of them, right? So I brought them from Los Angeles. I brought them from Detroit. I brought them from Arizona. I brought them from Texas. And this guy, his name was Rich Gaspari. He was getting ready for the Mr. Olympia, the biggest bodybuilding show in the world. And my show was always in August, and the Mr. Olympia was in September. So I told Les Thatcher I was bringing Gaspari in. He said, man, he's nothing but trouble. I said, well, I've already booked him and sent him half his money. And he said, I'll tell you right now, he's trouble. And, I mean, he was one of the hottest names out there. So I flew him from New Jersey. So he flew in on a Saturday night, I mean, a Friday night. And I went to the airport to pick him up. Of course, he didn't know me at all, you know. So I was there, and here he comes, this monster. And I said, hey, Rich. I said, I'm Jerry Oates. He said, hey, how are you? That was it. So we're walking to get his bags. He's not saying nothing, you know. I'm doing him a favor. I'm paying him $3,000. And instead of him saying, I appreciate you bringing me here, you know, blah, 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 he's not saying a word. It's nice to meet you. Thanks for having me. No. So we're going to get the bags. He's saying nothing. So we're sitting there waiting on his bags to come off the plane. He's not saying nothing. I said, Rich, by the way, I said, I heard you're a prick to do business with. He said, what? He said, who told you that? I said, just some friend of mine that's in this racket. You know, he just said, he told me you were hard to do business with, that you were hard to get along. Not me, man. Anything you want while I'm here, just let me know. I'll do it. But I had to get that off my chest because
sure.
I'm paying you cash money that nobody will ever know about, I'm sure. Because it's cash.
Right.
And I'm doing you a favor. Yeah, I'm flying you from New Jersey, round trip, putting you at the Hilton. You're going to go out on that stage and pose for, what, 3 minutes at the max? And I'm paying you $3,000, and you're going to treat me like that? I figured I was doing him a favor as well as him doing me one.
Well, you were certainly up front about asking him, you know.
And that turned him right around.
I think
had
so.
No trouble with him. He said, we got there that night. Whatever you want. When do you want me to go? And I said, you're going on last. You're going on last. That's fine, man. That's what you want. And I said, that's what I want. Never had no more trouble with it. He was the only one. Well, the second show I ever had, a girl from Los Angeles tried me. She thought I was some redneck hillbilly. I showed her. I still had the rest of her money in my pocket, cash. But, I mean, I ran it like Bobby said, it was a business to me.
Yep.
I've got a place that's sold out that I've got to entertain these people. They pay big money to, you know, come see their brother or nephew or son or aunt or uncle in the show. Plus, you know, I've got this professional bodybuilder on my hands that I got to make sure that he goes out and there don't be a jerk to the people and all that. It was a business to me. Like
yep.
Bobby said, I always thought our business was a business. But all you heard me, oh, yeah, we got drunk every night, we did this. Well, that's fine and well, you know, as long as you didn't kill somebody.
And there goes your liver.
You know, let me tell you, there's a payday for that, too.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
There's a payday for
and
that.
You know, and, you know, the thing is, and here again, just what you said there about being drunk every night and pilled up and doped up and, you know, for all the miles that we traveled, man, don't you know the good Lord had his hand on us that there was no more people killed or we didn't kill more people than what we did?
You know, those guys thought it's funny. Man, I drank a case of beer coming from Savannah, a case of beer coming from Tulsa. Where it was every night, everywhere.
Yeah.
And did you know I wouldn't travel with those guys? Did you know?
Me neither. I was very particular about who I rode with.
I've ridden. I don't know. I'm you know, different places everywhere that I'm in. But 99% of the time, I took my vehicle. I was not going to be obligated to anybody or any drunk. That was just me.
Yeah.
I had my own transportation, thank God. I was always able to drive a new car, a new vehicle, whatever I was driving. And I wasn't going to depend on somebody. And we're going to stop halfway. There's a club somewhere halfway to where we go. Not with me, you're not. That wasn't me.
I made my mind up very early in this business that if I was going to jail, it was going to be because I did something stupid, not because I was with somebody that did something stupid.
Right.
So I was very careful who I rode with.
As a musician, it was possible you could find somebody where you were working that was going to give you a hard time, and occasionally things would break out. But the most dangerous part of the night was 2 o'clock in the morning when you were driving home and somebody that's not in their right mind run off and kill you. You know, you had to really, you know, that was where you had to pray that everything was going to go all right.
Yeah,
I was going somewhere here in Georgia. I forgot how the person was in Columbus, and we were going to go somewhere. And I knew the type of person he was. And I said, I'm telling you right now, before we get in this car, where we're going, I know they have road checks. They wasn't road checks. They were checking everything, you know. I said, there's a chance when we go down through there, they're going to have they'll say they're checking license, but they're checking other stuff. I said, I'm telling you right now, if you got anything in that bag that's not supposed to be in there, you get it out of here right now. I said, because if we get checked and they have, for some reason, they find something, I said, they may not ever see you again. I said, I am not going to jail for you. No, man, I ain't got nothing in there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, Bobby, if I was going to jail, it would be something I did, not because something you did.
There you go.
And you never knew when you rode with somebody else, especially somebody you didn't know. You never knew what you were getting in the car with.
No, I just wouldn't do it. I absolutely wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I rode the majority. I mean, I probably made a million miles with wrestling too. You know. He'd drink a six-pack of Miller Ponies or eight-pack of Miller Ponies, whatever they were, whatever they come in. But, yeah, that didn't bother me. You know, my dad was killed by a drunk driver, and I have a very low tolerance for drunks. But a guy drinking a little pack of Miller Ponies or something like that don't bother me. I'm not a prude, but I rode with Ronnie West a lot. Ronnie would drink a Miller Light or a Pony or whatever it was. You know, that kind of stuff didn't bother me that bad. But never, never was I in fear with those two guys of ever having a problem. And you're talking about them little Toyotas you had. I've chased that Ted Oates from Porterdale and Carrollton and everywhere else back when my first wife was from Columbus and I would be going down there. I've chased that little Toyota all over this state.
But I know I was coming out of Tulsa one night, and I had a van, and I had about four guys in the van, maybe five. And we're coming, we haven't been out of Tulsa about 30 minutes. I heard somebody strike a match. Whoa, 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 man. I said, there ain't no smoking in here. Well, he said, I ain't smoking a cigarette.
Oh, yeah, that's all right then.
I said, wait a minute, man. I said, what are you talking about? I tell you who it was. We're talking about the business. I tell you, it was Sonny Rogers. Remember Sonny Rogers?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Buddy Roberts' brother.
That's right.
Yeah.
I said, man, what? I pulled my van over.
Yeah, I'm supposed to make it okay.
You got to be a nut. I said, I don't drive 55 going back to Shreveport. It's 350 miles. I said, I'm subject to get pulled over any minute. And I said, and they pull me over to stick their head in here and smell that. I said, I'm going to wind up losing my job. I'm hauling a dope head. I said, I tell you what, you already got it out. You throw it out right now. I don't know how much more you got. That ain't none of my business. I said, but you ain't like nothing in this band. I never hauled him again. We're talking about the business. I mean, that's what the show's about. I'm not going to pull any punches.
Yeah.
The thing with that is the guy had no more respect for you than to not ask, but to just do it.
That's correct.
You know?
Like it
Bob
was, Kelly, you know,
left Mike Boyette on the side of the road on I-10 one time coming from Pensacola to Mobile. Boyette fired one up. Kelly pulled right over, snatched him out, and left him there.
That'll teach you.
Listen,
yeah,
I thought
Kelly was
the
booker.
Like
Boyette was one of his top stars at the time, so he didn't care. He told him, he said, you do that, I'm leaving you. He did it anyway. I've said this before. Boyette used to carry a spray, and I don't know how in the world he found it, but back in those days, they had them in several cities, but what they used to call head shops. Well, they had one in Bel Air Mall in Mobile. You could buy anything, you know, drug paraphernalia. You could buy everything but the drug itself. And he had this little spray bottle that smelled like marijuana smoke. And he'd get pulled over, and they'd smell it. And he said, no, this is spray. And he'd spray it where they could smell it. And they'd say, oh, okay, we'll let him go. I don't think I ever saw Boyette when he was straight.
I don't either.
Well, you never had nothing to compare it to, so you don't know.
That's true. Norvell was bad about it, too, but he never did that with me. Now, he'd drink, and, you know, I drove him around quite a bit, and he'd drink, but he'd ask my if he could, and, if you know, as long as he wasn't driving, I didn't care. But he never fired nothing up in my car. He did rock it. I know that he drove Rocket crazy.
Yeah, I didn't mind if guys, I had a piano player that I worked with forever, and we'd be done. He'd be pretty well, you know, done for the night. He would be done for the night. You know, I loaded up his equipment many times, but, you know, it was okay. I did, you know, there's no way that I would have ever gotten into a car with him. You know, he rode with me, and that's the way it was.
Well, I made the mistake of riding with Joe LaDuke and the Sheepherders, and that cured me of that.
I was stopping and got on a running dog somewhere.
I was afraid to tell them I wanted to get out. I was afraid they'd throw me out and never slow down.
Well, that could have happened too, Will it do?
Well, I was made fun of, said I wasn't a real musician because I didn't smoke dope and didn't drink. But, I mean, you know, I've seen guys that would leave a job and leave a $2,000 guitar sitting there, you know, at the side of where they were loading up the equipment because they were so drunk they didn't remember to pack it. It's just unbelievable.
I don't doubt that at all.
Or need dope money so bad they'd hawk their instruments when they know they got a gig.
Yeah, then
they want
you to
go get their stuff for them.
Well, you know, and people you work for that had bars, they love that because they'd run a tab for the musician. And at the end of the night, the musician would owe them money.
Yeah. Just like the Blues Brothers.
That's right.
The gig was for $2,000, and you boys drank up $5,000 worth of beer.
Okay, you want me to do this spot here before we get to?
Yes, sir, if you would.
Okay. All right, let me see here. Let me take a little swig here. Be right with you.
Boy, it's a first-class operation.
Well, you know, that was the radio business. You had a little, you know, you had a button, and you could push it, and you could clear your throat, do whatever reps you wanted to, and if you were talking to somebody, they'd never know what you said. But at any rate, and then you'd go right back to it, and they'd say, oh, that sounds great. Yeah, well, you should have heard me 2 seconds ago. The Peach State Pandemonium podcast is happy to be sponsored by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information. They have over 150,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now. And if you sign up at our URL, which is audibletrial.com/GWHradio, you get one free audiobook at a one-month trial of the service. Back to you, Mike.
Thank you very much. So back to what you were talking about, Jerry, with the strange request. When I worked for Macy's, we would have, you know, celebrities come in and do various things. We had I had Elizabeth Taylor and Cher both come in for perfume launches, and Cher was that way. We had to take she had to use the store manager's office for her sitting room, and we had to take all his furniture out, get brand new furniture off the furniture floor, and fill it up the office up with that. And she wanted M&Ms, but all with the brown ones picked out. She didn't want brown ones in it. So, but other than that, I mean, she was nice, and she wasn't all that talkative or anything, but she was nice. And I only not only did special events, but I also worked security. And Elizabeth Taylor was totally standoffish. But the worst that I ever met was a store opening in Plantation, Florida. I was down there helping get the store open, but I was also there to handle the celebrity guest we had for opening day, and our main name was Robin Leach.
Oh,
and he was the biggest weenie of anybody I've ever met in my life. And I told him, I was like you, Jerry, I had to get it off my chest. I said, who are you? He was all out there making all these demands and stuff of me, and I said, wait a minute. I said, you got a television show where you talk about other celebrities. That doesn't make you a celebrity.
That's right.
It sure doesn't.
Yeah, it's
the nicest I met was Smokey Robbins. I met, you know, guys like him and David Brinkley and Tom T. Hall. They all came in and did book signings for books that they had out at the time. And they had no special demands. They just showed up, and I showed them where to sit and, you know, kind of stood over them and everything. And, you know, they were as gracious as they could be. But, you know, it all depends on how much publicity you get and how much of it you believe, I guess.
Yeah, to me, nobody's that important.
Nope.
And I guess the wrestling business spoils us somewhat as far as, you know, there. We were talking, I was talking to somebody at work. Garth Brooks is doing, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 shows here.
Yes.
And you know, there's still tickets available. I looked today just to see what they had. But the thing with, you know, there was a lady that when Elvis, one of the last times Elvis performed in Atlanta, and I saw Elvis 3 or 4 times, and I was an Elvis fan because he worked hard when he was on stage. But we had a lady pull up a 55-gallon garbage can or drum in front of the ticket window at the Omni, and she lived in it for 5 days. She lived in a garbage drum to be the first person in line when they put the Elvis tickets on sale. And you know, I was telling somebody about that today or yesterday, where somehow something got brought up. I can't think of anybody that I would wait in line to see, much less live in a garbage drum or a 55-gallon drum for. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just... if I pay to see somebody, I want them to work hard. If they don't, I'll never go see them again.
Right.
I don't know. I guess I figured out a long time ago, everybody puts their pants on the same way, one leg at a time, unless you're a fireman and jump in them. I mean, some of these people people are crazy.
They're crazy.
Well, for some people, the event itself is way...
The age of reality shows. Now we got people that are famous just for being famous. They don't have any talent. They don't do anything. They don't perform of any kind, you know.
The Kardashians. What they ever do.
Well, and the term reality is, you know, is
yeah, that's
oxymoron. It's, I mean, you know, really, because it's not. It's all scripted, you know. And it's,
of course. It's, I hate to hear that word reality show. There's no such thing.
Right.
Nope. I saw one episode of Idol, and I told the person I was watching with, I said, that's a work. What do you mean? I said, they know when they start this who's going to win. Or just because you're in a wrestling business, you think everything's fake. I said, what did I tell you about Jerry Springer? First time I saw Debbie Combs on there, I knew that was a work.
Yeah, you'd see people that you'd seen as in small parts in TV shows and things like that.
Bill Dundee and his son were on there.
Yeah,
Big
just part of the audience.
3 different times.
Yep.
Yep. And supposed to, you know, and yeah, it lets you know what was really going on.
mostly people are just famous for being famous.
That's right.
Well, I don't want to be famous. I'm very happy sitting here watching TV at night and talking on the phone with you guys.
Well, they could let you guest star on Honey Boo Boo show.
Oh, please.
She outdraws more than every wrestler in the business right now.
That says a lot for your wrestling business. Those guys over in Pell City, Alabama, paid her and her mama and sister and Honey Bear, Booga Bear, whatever his name is, to come over there. And they had been drawing, a couple hundred people, once a month or something, whatever they were running. They brought them over there and sold this building out. I mean, sold it out, turned people away. And the first thing I thought about was, what does that say about your business when a little 9-year-old snotty-nosed kid that's never done anything, just been on TV, outdraws your wrestling?
Right.
I'd shut the door.
What does that tell you about the American people?
Right.
I'm telling you.
Exactly.
Listen, my buddy Randy, he told me one night, we were at church on a Wednesday night, I'll never forget, and he's telling me about this Honey Boo Boo. I'd never seen it. He said, man, it's the funniest thing you have ever seen. He said, I'm addicted to it. He said, I go home and watch this. He said, I laugh for 30 minutes. And I came home and I told Debbie, and Debbie said, well, I had never seen it, but it's on tonight. We'll watch it. I watched about 5 minutes of it, turned the channel, and called Randy, and I said, how do you watch this crap? I mean, this is insane.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, you
and
saw
the thing is people all over the country think all people from the South are like that.
Right.
That's
well,
exactly
you
what
saw a lot of
them.
Don't
have any choice. I mean, between them and Swamp People and Duck Dynasty.
Well, you
I mean,
saw a lot of those
folks. We're all inbred hillbillies.
Well, you saw a lot of those folks in the small towns, but they knew what they were doing. They knew they were making a spectacle out of themselves, and that's what they did. But the sad thing about this little girl is that within a short time, her star is going to be gone. And she's going to think, I'm a star, and she doesn't have any talent. And then what's she going to do,
Get pregnant at 15, so it'll go
right.
A scandal.
Well, talking about Duck Dynasty, folks had talked to me about that show, and I'd never seen it. And, how funny it was and whatnot. And the guys are fairly clever, but, when I turned it on the first time, I said, this isn't reality. Everything these guys are doing here is very tightly scripted.
Well, absolutely.
And so, that was it for me.
I've never seen it.
Well, you're not missing a whole lot.
It is funny. There is some funny stuff on it, but it's,
But it's not reality.
No, it's not reality TV. I have managed to, it's been on like 20 years. I've never seen an episode of The Amazing Race. I've never seen an episode of Survivor. I just...
I hadn't either.
Doesn't appeal to me.
No,
I always end up seeing a few minutes of The Amazing Race because whatever the football game is that's on before it runs it into overtime. And so when the show that I want to watch that comes on at 9 o'clock, it's not on because they ran late. So that's how I've seen a little bit of it. But, when you compare it to the other reality shows, Amazing Race is not too bad, and that's why it's won all the awards that it has, because it's fairly interesting. But it's still not something I'm going to mark my calendar to make sure that I watch. It's not going to do it.
Well, the thing is, they know conflict sells, and they create conflict. It's like these ice road truckers and axe people.
Oh yeah.
When you got to bleep out every other word, and you can't follow the program because of that. all because that they're creating a conflict.
Right.
And it's ridiculous. And I like Pawn Stars because Pawn Stars gives it's a work too, but at least they give a little history lesson behind whatever it is they're talking about. But the True Channel has one that's set in Detroit called Hardcore Pawn. And that is the biggest farce I've ever seen in my life. All they do, everybody that comes in there is screaming and yelling and throwing things.
You couldn't stay in
business if that's what your clientele was. And it's just, it's ridiculous. That's the reason I quit watching Deadliest Catch. I loved it. But lately all it is people getting in fist fights on the deck and all. That doesn't appeal to me. If I want to see constant conflict, I'd watch a Roadrunner cartoon.
At least you could laugh.
Well, I don't. I never did like chase cartoons. I never did like Tweety and Sylvester, and I never could stand Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote because, you know, he never was going to catch him.
Well, I always liked it because I had stock in the Acme company.
I bought a lot of stuff that was from the Acme company.
They sell, legitimately, they sell boots, don't they? Isn't that...
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, who else can we trash?
I think we about worked them all over.
As Bill Bowman, you say we beat everybody in the territory.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to tell you, last week, two called me last Tuesday afternoon out of the blue. He sounded great.
He really does that every once in a while. He'll just get a wild hair and he'll call me sometimes just see how you doing.
They sounded real good.
I think we might order before we wind it down tonight. We might order mention on losing Joan Rivers today. I understand she's not in the wrestling business, but she sure did make me laugh over the years when she was.
She would replace
Johnny Carson because I was a Johnny Carson addict.
You know, she had trials and tribulations like everybody else. She had gone bankrupt, and her husband killed herself. But she was a funny lady, and you know what I liked about her? She spoke what she thought. You know.
Yep.
Whether you agreed with her or not,
and she wasn't afraid to make fun of herself, you know.
Did you ever see that commercial that she did? And I forgot what it was about. Maybe a credit card or something. And she said, you know, she had so many facelifts. She said, "Am I smiling?" She couldn't feel her face. She was so she made fun of herself, you know. And how do you knock that, you know?
Right.
She I think the funniest thing I ever heard about Joan Rivers. Was you guys familiar with the comedian Paul Rodriguez?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He said one time, Joan Rivers has one more facelift, she's going to have a goatee.
Yeah.
She said about herself one time, talking about laughing at her, she said she went to the gynecologist for a test, and he said they had her up in the stirrups, and the nurse opened the door and left the door open and said, some guy out in the waiting room said he looked in the door and said, "Oh, Joan, it's you."
She went out doing what she was best known for in the last few years, which was her surgeries of that type. You know, it was elective surgery that she had on her throat.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, I'm not trying to say this to scare you, Mike, because you couldn't be any more scared based on what you went through last year. But even surgeries that are, you know, that are commonplace, things can go wrong. And
yeah.
That unfortunately is what happened with her.
That's
but
true.
One thing,
I mean, she never was my cup of tea, but I give her this. You know, I was thinking today after I read she passed away, you know, she gets credit for being a pioneer in, as far as female comedians. Of course, you know, there were a few ahead of her, Phyllis Diller and Toadie Fields
right.
for two, but they never made the impact that she did.
No.
And I think it's because, like Bobby said, her being so visible on the Carson show is what made her career.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of comedians that have come along since her that had she not kind of set that, you know, that style that, I mean, take Roseanne Barr for an example.
Yeah.
Joan Rivers had, up to that, prior to her, as you said, you mentioned too, that were in that category, but she got her own television show. And she was a pioneer, and she set the stage for a lot of other women. To be able to do what she did, I think. And
you know, she was booked the next 2 months.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was,
still working.
Yeah, this was not, it wasn't like she had been in a hospital for a long time with some type of deadly illness or something. This was a reaction to surgery that she was having on her throat.
You mentioned Roseanne Barr, my favorite Roseanne Barr line of all time, and she did this on the Carson show there. She said her husband asked her, said, "When are you going to vacuum the floor?" She said, she told him, she said, "When is Sears going to invade a riding vacuum cleaner?"
Oh, man. Yeah, there are so many now that because of that style, that acerbic wit and everything that Joan Rivers had. I mean, Phyllis Diller, she wasn't near that sarcastic and everything. And, you know, she basically came out and talked about herself, how ugly
That's
she
correct.
Was.
And her
husband, Fang, exactly. And, you know, I can't, other than seeing Toadie Fields on game shows, I know she was on Ed Sullivan all the time. I can't ever remember anything she ever did.
She was on Mike Douglas' show a lot in the afternoons.
Yeah. And another one, in fact, but I know we're way off subject, but the I saw a thing on the one of the cable channels the other day. It was a documentary on Moms Mabley.
Yep.
And I loved Moms Mabley when I was a kid.
Don't think she wasn't funny.
She was absolutely funny. And, you know, of course, my parents had, back in when we were all kids, had what they called party records. And I don't know if you guys remember the name Rusty Warren.
Yes.
But, you know, she was more like the female Red Fox. She was
yes.
something, you know, that wasn't going to appear on any shows anywhere or do anything like that. But
well, that was the circuit that Red Fox worked, too, you know.
Yeah.
You know. Yes.
Exactly. But Moms Mabley, it's funny, she ran away when she was 13, 14 years old and joined a vaudeville group of Ma Rainey and who was, Ma Rainey's from Columbus, if I'm not mistaken. They used to have a museum for her down in Columbus.
Right.
I don't know if it's still open or not, but and her husband, his name was Pop something or other, but anyway, she looked old her whole life, so they called her Moms. Well, they initially started her out as Jackie Moms Mabley, or Jackie
right.
Mabley, and then Moms Mabley. But that wasn't even her name. I can't remember what her real name was now. But she was Sam. They interviewed had old interviews of Sammy Davis Jr. where he was on Mike. You mentioned Mike Douglas. Well, she was always on Mike Douglas' show.
Yes,
Moms
and
Mabley
she played older than she was. You know, she'd take her
oh,
teeth
yeah.
out.
But
yeah.
the reason Sammy Davis Jr. says she got the nickname Moms is because she babied everybody. You know, everybody backstage, you know, they carried all her problems to her, and she was their mom. And even when she was, you know, 20 years old. So that's where she picked up that nickname. But she was so funny. My parents used to have her records and some 8-track tapes of her, and she was so funny. But I learned a lot about her as far as that documentary went, and she was always interesting to me, and she's one that nobody ever thinks about anymore, but she was it back in those days.
Red Fox said one time, said he was in the war, and he said he had to have plastic surgery done on his face, and he said, I don't know where they got the skin from, he said, but every time I get tired, my jaws want to set out.
Well, fellas, I think that just about should wrap us up. Jerry, I know you probably got an early morning. I know Bobby does.
I do, sir. I've been off the last 2 days, and tomorrow's my Monday, so.
I got to be ready for the guys to come finish the floor in the morning, so I got to.
They need good supervision, so you.
That's
sure
right.
That you are...
It's not going to come from me. I make my wife strong boss that. So.
Well, it's been fun as always, guys, and. Let's see, I'm having surgery I'll be in the hospital 3 weeks from now, so we won't do a show that week. Probably won't the next week because I may still be in the hospital, and I'm not sure going forward from there because I'm not sure how well I'll be doing once I get back to the Palatial Simmons estate.
You're going to be doing good, Mike.
I have a feeling I am, but
you're going to do well.
I'm going to... You know, have the energy or whatever to
yeah, well,
do the
that's
show.
That's one
that
thing. If you don't feel like it, don't do it.
No,
if
but
he's
I,
not,
I,
if he's not doing good, he'll be living at the Palatial West or Oates Estate.
Honestly, I think once you get this the rerouting done here, you're gonna you're gonna feel even better than you do right now.
I think
well,
so
I'm hoping and praying, and I know this is a long shot and it's a pipe dream, but I can pray. And if you're gonna pray, you might as well pray for what you want.
That's
I'm hoping
it.
And praying that when
fine,
they did the
Mike.
Initial surgery, the surgeon hits something, and when they do the redo, he'll free up whatever nerve is keeping my feet from working, and I'll be able to get up and walk.
Absolutely.
But, so
we'll keep you in our prayers, too, Mike.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. I appreciate it. But anyway, we'll get together next week and we'll do this again and see what kind of trouble we can get into.
Sounds
all
good.
Right. Sounds
all
right, good. Hopefully no lawsuits from the people we talk about, but there you go.
Yeah.
Well, if we get away with it this week, we'll really dig into them next
week.
We're
a limited liability radio show because none of us have anything, so we don't have to.
That's true.
That's true. But like
liability.
But like Jerry just said, most of the people we talk about are no longer with us, so that's
you got that right. See you guys next week.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.